at the Curtis back there in the back. Doctor, I think you can check to see if these kids have bad bladder. He's getting up every few minutes to go to the bathroom. I want to cover a few things that they didn't cover here, or they didn't emphasize from our standpoint, from Nana's standpoint. First thing is that we've gone into this mining venture to get to create jobs. It's the most important reason. 2 years ago, we asked our shareholders if they wanted us to try and do something with mining or not. The reason, and they said yes, try and open up the mine. The reason is the jobs. So that's why we're as far as we are now. Another thing about this is that you can't look at it like it's a outside operation, it's Cameco's operation, or Nana's operation. It's your operation. It's your land, even though its title is in Nana, because you own Nana. We're in it for you. So you can't look at it like it's some outsider doing something. We have to look at it as our partnership with Cameco. It's the only way it's going to work. If we look at it like an outside operation, we're not going to get the benefits that we want out of it. You can see from the amounts of money that Nana is going to get, that in addition to getting jobs, we are looking at making some money as a business too. The goal for shareholder hire on this one is 100%. We may never reach it, but we're going to try our best to get as high as we can. We think, with very little effort on our part, your part, we can go well over 50% in a hurry if it starts up. And then work at it until we get close to or get to the 100% mark. We're in there for those jobs, and we're going to work at it. The money that we're getting on the business side, quite a bit, looks like it in here. We get $1.5 million this year, and we get $1 million a year coming to Nana each year until production starts. Then it jumps up to 4.5% of what they sell. And that could be anywhere from 7 to 10 million or more a year. Then after they recover their money that they've invested in the mine, $300 or $400 or $500 million, then it'll jump up to 25% of what they make. And that could be around $60 million a year. Each year after, or every 5 years after that, it jumps up 5% more until it reaches 50%. When it reaches 50%, it could be 30 or 40 years after the mine opens, then we would get something in excess of $100 million a year. There's a lot of money there. But all that money that we get from that is subject to what we call the 7I provision of the Settlement Act, which means that we have to share it with the other 11 regional corporations in Alaska. We will keep 34% and we share the rest with those other regions. So we don't get, we get about a third of that money. Get it off. You notice they mentioned our INUPAP value. We'll talk a little bit about that. Right now, in our villages, we can't handle what little money comes in. We're having a difficult time handling the money we get now. This mine, when it opens, will have a payroll of about $10 million a year. And we'll get more than half of that, we hope. And later on, of course, to all of them. A $5 million or more additional money that we'll be getting into our villages, and we can't handle what little we've got now. We were told by our shareholders that we'll get jobs for them, to make their life easier and better, not to make it worse. The way we're going now, if we threw in $5 million or more into our villages, things would get worse, not better. The program that we started to take care of this problem is called our Utah Spirit Program. Each of the villages we got started in it. I don't know how you guys are doing here, if you're going very good or not, but it's got to go. We get down the road here and we've got all these jobs, we better give them to outside people, white people, and not take them ourselves if we can't handle the money. Because it's not going to do us any good. So it's very important that we get this program going. So if you get an opportunity to get involved in our spirit program, you better do it. If our spirit program doesn't succeed, we may not even open the mine, whether we could make money out of it or not. Manna is not in the business of making life worse for our people. We're in the business of making life better. But we can't do it by ourselves. You have to help. And the spirit program, being involved in that, living by those values, those Utah values, is what is going to make it a good mind for all of our people. So that's got to be done. Initially, during the feasibility study, which I told you will take a year and a half, 2 years, maybe a little longer, there will be very few jobs. This summer, we figure there may be between 15 and 30 involved. And most of those people that take those jobs will come out of Kivalina and Motac. They're the closest, fair land, they should benefit the area. If, after feasibility, it looks like that we're going to go ahead and construct, then there'll be a lot more jobs and a lot more people from all of our villages will have the opportunity to go to work at those jobs. Let me explain what happens with feasibility. MICO looks at lots of things they have to. They look at what harm might come to the land. They look at what harm might come to subsistence. They look at all kinds of things. And Manna is concerned with some of those things too. In our agreement, we have as much say in Cominco in certain areas. Subsistence is one, the environment another one. Mine size, the number of jobs, we have a say in that. So Manna can shut down or decide not to build that mine. And also after it starts, we could shut it down if some of those areas are of concern to us. The main goal doesn't correct them if we find a problem. On subsistence, we'll have a committee. Also in agreement, the committee will be made up of the elders' councils of Kivalina and Motac. They'll perform their land, they know better what important subsistence is there. And those elders' councils will advise Manna and Cominco on subsistence. So they'll have a lot to say about it. Each, and you will too, each year, Cominco will come around and give you a report on how we're doing. At least once a year. Of course, we'll come with them just because we're their partner. And we'll talk to you about what we're doing, what we plan to do, and see how you feel about it. Give you a chance to have your say about the mine too. Kivalina and Motac, you'll have to go to their villages at least twice a year. We want to agree to maintain this kind of communication with all of our people. That mine, if it works, will be of a lot of benefit to us. We want you to involved in making the decisions that, that make it go. As far as what we're going to do to prepare for the jobs, we're going to be working with Kaminko to identify every job that will be available, what kind of skills are required. And we're going to match it up with shareholders who have skills already by name. So then we'll know and we'll have contacted our shareholders who have those skills before the mine opens to see if they're available for the work and they're going to be there. If not, we'll substitute another shareholder for those jobs. Those jobs where our shareholders have no skills, we'll set up training programs or find training programs where our shareholders can go and get those jobs. Some of the ones that require higher education and a long time, longer education, and maybe more experience, for instance, engineers, mining engineers, Kaminko will have to bring in mining engineers from the outside to hold those jobs initially. But in those cases, we still want to have a program where our own people can take those jobs eventually. We'll try to find high school kids in high school or high school graduates or kids in college who want to work towards those kinds of careers. We'll support them and designate those positions for them so that as soon as they're qualified, Kaminko can make the jobs available. This way we might reach that 100% eventually. You notice that they mentioned that what we're asking is that they don't have a mining site where people just live there and go to work. We want that mine to be like Trudeau Bay, where you go to work for a little while and then you come back to your village and live. We want to change the lifestyle. We want to make a bunch of full-time miners out of our people. Even though that mine might last for 50 years or 100 years or more, that's still not very long. And we're not going to teach our people to be dependent on that kind of a short-term business. Living in our villages, maintaining our consistent lifestyle is more important than that. That's why it's that way. People will make less money by working only half the year. But there'll be twice as many jobs that way, and more of our people can benefit from it. And the time that they're not working, they can go back to living off the land, just living with their families in the village. And we think that's the best way to handle it. They could take advantage of the money, the benefits from the job that this kind of a project can bring us, but at the same time we maintain our traditional lifestyle. That's essentially how we're going to try and work it. Some of the training and the jobs, we're not ready to tell you what they are yet. We're just now looking at it. We just signed the agreement with the Monday. We need a few more days to figure out all the details, and we're going to be working on that. Okay. Now we'll answer any questions you might have about the project.
What do the elders of
Kimberley
have exactly?
The elders of Kimberley and NOTAC were part of the shareholders that told us to go and try to get the mine going in the first place. Right now they've had some of the people in the village have had this same report to show them how far along we are. To explain that this is exactly the same as we explained to you here, and that's all they have. During the next year and a half, 2 years, they will be involved in the studies that are going to be done. So I think they'll have a lot more to say. That's right. I want to qualify that because we know we're going to dig a hole there, at least one. And they don't consider that hurting you at this point. And they'll look at that, and all the studies that they make, to see if that would hurt anything. If it doesn't hurt anything, then we go ahead with it. But we still have a hole.
Thank you.
this mind my slave.
Like him. That's right. Be like in his chair.
Okay. So we should do without the job, and get the way we are, without the income. Because my dream is something. No other possibilities in this region. Otherwise, we'd be in nothing that can provide that many jobs. I feel exactly the same way you do. When I was asked about this role of input, I told the shareholder, I didn't want to make money. Why should I care? I make enough money. I can provide for my family. The rest of the people who have no jobs don't have to do it. Right? That's what that means. This day and age, we need money. Not a lot, but we need some. Each time you ask for electricity, all kinds of other things that will make life easier to live and more comfortable, you have to pay for it. Otherwise, you have to go on welfare. We don't feel, at least the bulk of our shareholders, that welfare is a good alternative to working for wages. So our people need jobs. And they've gone over this, they looked at it, they know that they can create some problems. We think we can handle those problems. The land will not be harmed, or the mine won't, at least long term, right now, without doing more extensive studies that have to be done, at least 50 years. We'll get a good initial guess at that point, enough to be able to make a decision whether they're going to pump the money into it and get it going or not. That's about all they can do. Because they can't do extensive exploration of any particular area until they start. Once they start the mine, exploration won't stop in that area. They'll keep boring holes to find out exactly where the deposit is and how much it is. Generally, in this kind of condition, they find more ore right there. So this is why they're saying about somebody sells these things to them, that's like, let George talk about that a little bit. Some of the processes, some of the chemicals they use are harmful, but they got programs to take care of them. This isn't quite like coal or asbestos mining or anything like that. You get rocks like this, crush it up, and they float out through a chemical process. They're ready to sink, like flour. It's dried up, and then it's hauled out this way. It'll be hauled. Right now, they're trying to figure out a way to directly as they can from the mine site to the ocean. And one map over there. Gray shade on the light, with Kibbeline in the center. The gray area is a study area. We look at how to haul the concentrate through the coast. And what they're going to do is try to figure out a port site south and north of the Kibbeline. And then they'll build either a railroad or a railroad somewhere down in here or over this one. That's what they're looking at. Part of the feasibility study will look at the first one. And then it'll be stored here until the ice conditions allow a ship to come. And then this concentrate is loaded on a ship and then the ship goes to the harbor. Depends on where the market is. There are too many smokers in the world that are convinced. Canada, the United States, and Europe. The accidents in your bathroom. Most places like most operations like this have programs. Operation like this, they're very costly to have actors, so they have very active safety programs. You saw in the slides, we were missing mind players who are hard masks, safety glasses, protective clothing, and boots. So they work very hard at it. If they dumped a whole bunch of lead concentrate in it, they would have to get it out right away. There would be people there checking to see what the level is downstream. Those kinds of things you have to prepare for. They probably try and make sure that the trucks couldn't crash on that kind of thing. Anything can happen.
Yes, Johnny, earlier you spoke about jobs that trains make available for people, make available for people in jobs that are related to mining engineering. Obviously, there are other kinds of jobs that go on that are not directly related.
They're generally the same field. They're engineers or chemists.
I'm wondering if there's an assessment done by anybody in the region that
funded to do that. Most of those skills are published catalogs by the state and federal government through the counselors in the high schools. They're brought out to everybody. And they do it on a state or federal government-wide basis. And I don't think we're going to make any more effort. We tried, for instance, a few years ago because it was an area we thought was important to get some of our people to get natural resources training so they could become game wardens, biologists with the state fish and game and the federal agency, and we got absolutely zero response. So that's where we made an effort. I think our efforts are going to be directed at what's going to benefit us. And those general things are going to be have to be taken care of. General education things by educators, not men.
My only concern, Johnny, and I think it's a very valid one, when you bring up the mind, there's going to be a lot of other luggage that comes up, EPA, state, and others. I'm sure I'm correct. And the problem is that if it's not our people who are coming up as part of that luggage, it'll be a lot of non-impact who will come up and probably have a lot of the same negative stuff that goes on here.
Well, the problem there is that I don't think that any of them will ever be full-time up there. I don't know. They generally have greater responsibilities, and they just come up, even maybe if it's once a month, to go check a water sample or something, or do a safety inspection or something. They're not there all full-time. You ever have any of those kind of people full-time?
I think you're right, John. I think it's important to be work to be done in those areas,
I don't think we'd waste any time on it right now because they wouldn't put our people on it. They wouldn't put them. Most of the old people will benefit by how you handle that money more than anything else. But right now, a lot of our people that earn money come back home and get drunk and raise hell. And the elders would be just happy if people didn't spend their money that way. That would be enough of a benefit to them, and they'd be happy for the rest of their lives. But really, what you have now is, without the jobs, is everybody hurting because the elders are giving their money, what little they get, to help the rest of their families because they have no other income. If those families got income, maybe we could turn it around and then the younger people would be helping the elders, especially if our spirit program worked and we tried to do it because it was the right thing to do. So I think those kind of benefits can happen. Yeah. That's right. And there'll be other programs that are, Social Security is based on work. It's not a welfare program. It's like an insurance program, a retirement program for everybody in the United States. It's not a welfare program. Job placement is Tomiko comes to Nana. We have an organization for that. And we will then give a listing of the skills that are necessary and maybe even a listing of shareholders with those skills to meet up Manpower and they'll contact the people to go on the job. That's how it works. About a year ago, meet up Manpower came out and everybody, all the shareholders, fill out. You will have to work it out when you get to a point where you're ready to work. Right now, we're not even sure how young you can be to work. 18 is okay by state law. There's some jobs where you can work younger with parents' permission. We're looking into that to see if we can get some of these jobs lower. But generally, you have to be 18. What we're doing with these questionnaires is we're putting them into our, inputting that information into our computer that has our shareholder register. And so within a few months, we'll be able to, when Tomiko comes to us and say that we need two cat skinners and three carpenters, we can punch in there and we can get a list of all the available cat skinners and carpenters that are not working, that have those skills. And we just get them to meet up Manpower, and they know how to contact them just based on that spin-off. And this way we can respond quickly to their needs and keep our people on the job as support others. While we're setting this up, with this summer, probably the way it'll be done is people who have applications already into the meet up Manpower will be the ones that are contacted. Full operation. Well, they're saying 200 to 300. Gary, you're using figures that are don't include the hauling. Because you guys have looked at hauling as a contract. That'll be another 100 or so. About maybe 50 mechanics. There's more available. Jobs in construction too. For 3 years that we work there. All kinds of carpentry work. A lot of heavy equipment work because they have to go to the road, the railroad. That's the the first thing we're going to try to get set up with is the heavy equipment operators and mechanics, because we know that they're going to be needed sometime down the road. And even if the mine doesn't open up, there'll always be construction work for them someplace in the state. So we're going to go ahead and look for that kind of training first. But most of the other things, we're going to have to wait until the feasibility study is done, ones related to mining. So, you know, it may be, oh, some of them might start, you know, 6 months from now. Some may take a year before we get them started. Because it's, we can't really train people to be miners if the mine isn't going to open. And we got to wait until that study is done before we know whether it's going to be open or not. And we'll run the, it'll be the meetup again, or the Cosby Technical Center, which will be contacting people for training. Parts of the region, it depends on who owns the land and what the status is. Like, well, you'd have to be more specific which area, and then we can find out if it's open. A lot of this land is standing to get on. Have any more questions, there's some displays over here, and George and Jerry can explain it to you. There's some maps showing you exactly where the location is, and there's a model of the area close to where the mine is, so you can get some idea of what has to be built there, and the kind of equipment that will be used there, and you can look at some of the ore samples that are there. When we're done, you're done doing that, you can go home. We'll be finished. Thanks for coming.
That's the end of the Buckland tape.